Hi, I'm Jackie Roble with the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. During the next 30 minutes, I will be sharing nutrition information from the Nutrition Action Health Letter. Nutrition Action Health Letter is the flagship publication for the Center for Science and the Public Interest. Published 10 times a year, Nutrition Action provides honest, unbiased science-based advice on nutrition and health. It's the world's largest circulation nutrition newsletter, bringing the latest nutrition news and advice to more than 500,000 readers. Nutrition Action is totally free of advertising, so we're free to blow the whistle on products that aren't what they pretend to be and to applaud the good ones. Please use this information presented in this broadcast in consultation with your personal physician. The following articles are from the November and January edition of the Nutrition Action Health Letter. Bugs with benefits. Probiotics may not be harmless. Promote digestive balance. Helps maintain a healthy immune system. Friendly bacteria that benefit your skin, health, and beauty. Probiotics make appealing promises, but they may not deliver and may not be safe. Peter Cohen is an associate professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School and a general internist at Cambridge Health Alliance. He is an expert on, and at times an outspoken critic of, the dietary supplement industry. Cohen spoke with Nutrition Action's Caitlin Dow. Do probiotics work? What is a probiotic? According to the World Health Organization, a probiotic is a live microorganism which, when administered in adequate amounts, confers a health benefit on the host. But in the United States, probiotics are foods or supplements with live microorganisms that simply claim to maintain or enhance health. Companies don't need evidence that they do. Why not? Many probiotics are supplements, which are loosely regulated by the Food and Drug Administration. As long as companies stick to the language of the law, they can imply that a probiotic works. They just have to use something called a structure function claim. That is, that the probiotic supports the structure or function of a body system. Probiotics companies can't claim to treat or cure a disease. They can't say, for example, that their product treats diabetes or lowers blood sugar, but they can say that it supports healthy blood sugar levels. Most consumers will interpret those phrases to mean the same thing, so labels can be misleading. Can probiotics keep us healthy? Many small preliminary studies have looked at whether healthy people are, say, less likely to get the flu or have gastrointestinal discomfort if they take a probiotic. But the results are inconsistent. What's missing are large, long-term, high-quality studies to see if probiotics work. What misconceptions do we have about probiotics? Many people think of probiotics as interchangeable, that all these bacteria are good and you can just take anything, but that's not true. We should think about them like a medication. You wouldn't take any random medication to treat high blood pressure. You take a drug that lowers blood pressure. Similarly, when probiotics are helpful, it's a very specific strain of microorganism that you have to take. If we find that a probiotic can help healthy people stay healthy, it will almost definitely be a very specific strain of a bacteria at a very specific dose. If there isn't good evidence, why do so many people take probiotics? Scientists have made tremendous advances in our understanding of the microbiome, the bacteria that live in our gut, and how important it is for our health. That enthusiasm for the microbiome, along with some creative marketing and a supplement market that is so loosely regulated, has allowed this area to explode. The market has completely outpaced the science. What else confuses people? People think that you can take a probiotic and it will colonize your gut and become part of your microbiome. But there isn't good evidence that most probiotics even take up residence in the gut if we have a healthy, intact microbiome. Most of the research suggests that probiotics are visitors that are just passing through. They might have some benefit as they pass through, but those benefits haven't been well characterized. And some probiotics may not be stored properly before or after people buy them. Some need to be refrigerated, but aren't. So they may not even be alive by the time you swallow them. The most likely scenario is that people are wasting their money. Is that true for all probiotics? No. For example, the yeast Saccharomyces boulardii reduces the risk of antibiotic-associated diarrhea. But again, it's a very specific probiotic for a very specific health concern. Can a doctor help patients pick the right probiotic? When it comes to probiotics, many doctors are just as confused as consumers. Doctors are in the learning stage, and we need to realize that just as medications differ from one another, so do bacteria. As the science is clarified, we'll be recommending the right strain for the right problem, but we're not there yet. Do probiotics pose other problems for doctors? Yes, a doctor might prescribe a probiotic for good reason. Maybe they have a patient that they're treating for Clostridium difficile, a bacterial infection that causes diarrhea and can cause serious inflammation of the colon. A probiotic like Saccharomyces boulardii may reduce the risk of C. diff-associated diarrhea, so the doctor calls down to the hospital pharmacy and requests S. boulardii for the patient, but the pharmacy may well not have it. A recent study found that most hospital pharmacies only stock one kind of probiotic, and it may not be the one the patient needs. Are probiotics safe? Do we know if probiotics are safe? We don't. A recent study reviewed nearly 400 randomized controlled trials aimed at changing the microbiome, usually with probiotics. Most of them didn't adequately report adverse effects. Without that information, we can't say whether probiotics are safe. How might probiotics cause harm? In dozens of case reports, probiotics have caused infections in people who are frail or immune compromised. For example, if there's a breakdown in the lining of the gut, the probiotic bacteria can enter the bloodstream and spread throughout the body. But those are very rare situations in people who are already really sick. Generally, probiotics don't cause infections in healthy people. So do healthy people need to worry about probiotics? At this point, we're concerned about risks that are theoretical. For example, probiotics, like all bacteria, may have genes that make them resistant to certain antibiotics. Some of these genes can hop from one bacterium to another. So if you took a probiotic supplement with an antibiotic-resistant gene, it could transfer to a disease-causing bacteria in your gut, and then you'd have something that could be resistant to treatment. How likely is that? The odds of it happening seem remote. However, it has happened in animal and test tube studies. In the only study that's been done in people, the gene didn't get transferred from the probiotic that people swallowed to the bacteria in their gut, but that was done in only 7 people. We need more research to know if gene transfers can happen in the human intestine. Does anything else worry you? Quality is an issue with all kinds of supplements. The FDA has recommended good manufacturing practices that companies are supposed to adhere to. But of roughly 650 supplement-making facilities that the FDA inspected in 2017, roughly half had violations such as failure to accurately report the identity, purity, and strength of their supplements. There's also the issue of contamination. Multiple studies have found that commercial probiotics contained live, though rarely harmful, microorganisms that weren't listed on the label, so consumers may not get what they think they're getting. What can the FDA do to improve the quality and safety of probiotics? The FDA recently released a draft guidance that would give probiotic sellers the option of listing the number of colony-forming units, the number of living organisms, in a serving. The FDA should make that a requirement instead of an option. The FDA should also require companies to list the strain or strains of bacteria in a bottle along with the number of live organisms for each strain. That's also optional now, and it should be required. And the FDA should update its good manufacturing practices to include safety testing that would identify and eliminate potentially transferable antibiotic-resistant genes. Plus, the agency should do more inspections to ensure that there are no contaminants in probiotics. Is that realistic? Canada already requires its probiotic manufacturers to adhere to these standards, so this is all doable. I'd like to see the FDA become more aggressive in regulating and keeping a close eye on the companies that produce probiotics. Should the FDA take probiotics off the market? No. We need high-quality probiotics with good safety track records that are accurately labeled and that make healthy claims only if there's substantial evidence to support them. But that would require a new law, and Congress is unlikely to tackle this topic anytime soon, unfortunately. What should consumers do in the meantime? I don't recommend starting a probiotic unless you talk to your doctor first. And if your doctor recommends one, ask her or him to show you the study that supports the use of a specific strain of a probiotic for whatever condition you have. That won't address all the issues, but it's a good place to start. So you'd be cautious. Yes, many of the safety concerns are theoretical, but so are many of the benefits. Consumers should appreciate that. Even if probiotics can colonize your gut, you're talking about changing your microbiome without any evidence that that's a good idea. Despite the advertising, it's best to be cautious and skeptical. Most promising probiotics. Nearly all probiotics need more evidence. These strains have the best so far, according to our latest look. In two studies, 170 women taking antibiotics for bacterial vaginosis, BV, also took a placebo or Lactobacillus rhamnosus, GR1, and Lactobacillus reuteri, RC14, daily. After a month, BV had cleared up in roughly 90% of the probiotic takers of Femdophilus versus 40 or 50% of the placebo takers. Florester, a daily probiotic supplement. In 21 studies that enrolled nearly 4,800 children and adults, the yeast Saccharomyces boulardii cut the risk of antibiotic-associated diarrhea in half. And finally, Align probiotic supplement. In two studies of roughly 440 adults with irritable bowel syndrome, Bifidobacterium infantis 35624 eased symptoms like abdominal pain and distension more than a placebo. Quick studies, a snapshot of the latest research on diet, exercise, and more. Which comes first? Does order matter when you add two foods to a bowl? Researchers told 90 college students to add yogurt, then muesli, to a bowl on one occasion, and to add muesli, then yogurt, on another. On average, the students added more muesli, or yogurt, when they added it first. What to do? When you fill a bowl, start with the ingredient you want to eat more of. Waist or weight. A woman's waist may better predict her risk of type 2 diabetes than her weight. Researchers tracked roughly 136,000 postmenopausal women for nearly 15 years. Waist size predicted diabetes risk even better than weight. Women with a waist between 31 and 35 inches had a 59% higher risk than those with a smaller waist. A woman with a waist over 35 inches had three times the risk compared to a woman with a waist under 31 inches. A large waist was even worse for women with Asian ancestry. Their risks were roughly 2.5 times higher in the 31 to 35 inch range and nearly 4.5 times higher if over 35 inches. What to do? Keep tabs on your waist, not just your weight. Prostate cancer and exercise. Vigorous exercise may lower the risk of advanced or lethal prostate cancer. Researchers tracked more than 49,000 men aged 40 to 75 for 26 years. Those who reported doing the most vigorous exercise had a 30% lower risk of advanced prostate cancer and had a 25% lower risk of lethal prostate cancer than men who did the least. The most group did the equivalent of 25 minutes a day of running. What's more, men who did the most vigorous exercise had a 29% lower risk of having tumors with a fusion of two genes, TMPRSS2 and ERG, than those who did the least. That could help researchers figure out how exercise might protect the prostate. What to do? If you can jog, run, bicycle, swim laps, row, climb stairs, do calisthenics, or play tennis, squash, or racquetball. This study can't prove that vigorous activities like those lower the risk of advanced or lethal prostate cancer, but they can keep your heart in shape. Now, The Healthy Cook by Kate Sherwood. Pass the plants. Want a delicious plant-based meal on the table in 30 minutes? Here are a one-dish dinner that you're going to love. Savory tofu and broccoli serves two. Ingredients: 1 14-ounce package extra firm tofu, 2 tablespoons mayonnaise, 1 tablespoon reduced sodium soy sauce, 1 teaspoon Dijon mustard, 1/2 a teaspoon toasted sesame oil, 1/2 teaspoon honey, 4 cups chopped broccoli, 1 tablespoon plus 1 tablespoon peanut oil, 1 bunch scallions chopped. Cut the tofu into 1/2-inch thick triangles. Blot with a paper towel. Make the sauce. In a medium bowl, whisk together the mayonnaise, soy sauce, mustard, sesame oil, and honey. Stir-fry the broccoli in 1 tablespoon of the peanut oil until tender, crisp, 2 to 5 minutes. Stir in the scallions and stir-fry for 1 minute more. Divide into bowls. Add the remaining 1 tablespoon of oil to the pan. Sauté the tofu until browned on both sides, 2 to 5 minutes. Add the tofu to the bowls. Drizzle with the sauce. Some like it hot. What's new in the hot cereal aisle? By Lindsay Moyer and Jolene Mafness. 1. Look for all or nearly all whole grain. That's easy. The grain in most hot cereals like oats is whole. Exception, grits and cream of wheat or rice. We counted bran, like oat bran or wheat bran, as whole because you're getting the fiber-rich part of the grain. Number 2, skip or skimp on added sugars. Another easy one. Plenty of hot cereals made of oats or other whole grains are unsweetened. You can tell that from their ingredient list. No sugar, honey, etc. Those are our best bites. A few brands even jazz themselves up with nuts, seeds, or dried fruit. If they haven't, add your own. Want a tad more sweetness? We couldn't set a limit on added sugars for our honorable mentions because most packages don't yet carry the new Nutrition Facts label, which lists added sugars. But we know from early adopters that all but 0 to 3 grams of the total sugars in hot cereals is typically added. That's no surprise since many products have more sugar than fruit. And total sugars is on the current label. So we set the limit for honorable mentions to no more than 1.5 teaspoons of total sugars per serving, or 7 grams. Some lightly sweetened finds, Quaker Simple and Wholesome Organic Date and Almond. The new multigrain hot cereal, oats, barley, and amaranth, is dotted with plenty of chopped dates for sweetness, so only 0.5 teaspoon of sugar is added. Purely Elizabeth Superfood Oats. Superfood means that Liz adds fine but not super quinoa and amaranth to her oats. The cranberry pumpkin seed gets a touch of added sugar from the apple juice concentrate in its dried cranberries. Other flavors have no added sugars. Trader Joe's oatmeal cups. Our favorite? The tart cherry, chia, and pumpkin seed adds only enough sugar to sweeten its cherries. Stow a cup of it, or the strawberry raspberry, in your desk drawer for those rush out of the door mornings. Wild Friends Oats and Nut Butter Cups. One of our favorite ways to eat our nut butter is adding it to a warm bowl of oatmeal, says Wild Friends. Simply knead the nut butter packet and drizzle it over the single-serve cup of hot oats. Expect more calories, around 350 per cup, than other oatmeals, thanks to the peanut butter. We liked the peanut blueberry and almond cranberry. Each has just 2 or 3 grams of added sugars, enough to sweeten its dried berries. Or hold a spoonful of your own nut butter on the surface of any hot oatmeal until it starts to melt, then drizzle it in. 3. Check the sodium. Most flavored varieties in salt. Add salt. We've lagged hot cereals with more than 100 milligrams of sodium per serving with a salt shaker in our chart. If you're watching every milligram, start with plain hot cereal and rely on your own fruit and nuts for flavors. Right stuff. Beanie Rotini. There's a new kid on the pasta made of beans block, and its name is Barilla. Who wouldn't want pasta made out of fiber-rich, protein-packed bean or lentil flour rather than ordinary white flour? Until today, maybe you. Many legume pastas are crumbly and taste, well, like beans. Not Barilla. The red lentil rotini, or penne and chickpea rotini, or casereche, don't quite match the springy texture of a traditional white pasta made of semolina wheat, but they're the closest yet. It's no coincidence that Barilla picked rotini, penne, and casereche. Short shapes are less likely to crumble than long, thin strands of spaghetti. Just add your favorite pesto garlic sauce or marinara, and you're in business. If you're looking for extra protein, you'll walk away with 13 grams lentil or 11 grams chickpea per serving. About 1 cup of cooked pasta, which has just under 200 calories. You'd get 7 grams of protein in ordinary white pasta and 8 grams in whole wheat. And talk about fiber. To be a good source, food need 2.5 grams per serving. These babies have 6 to 8 grams. Plus, they're richer in potassium than wheat. And if you're gluten-free, so are these pastas. Bring on the Robini. Food porn. Belly up. Pork bellies are in, and the Cheesecake Factory never disappoints. Thank heavens the chain stepped up to the plate with its pork belly sliders. 4 mini burgers with slices of slow-roasted smoked pork belly with barbecue sauce, coleslaw, and fried pickles. Naturally, they're on the appetizer menu. After all, who will want to start their meal with the equivalent of 1, 2, 3, or 4 Big Macs? Yes, a single slider has 520 calories and 10 grams, half a day's saturated fat, plus 900 milligrams of sodium, all on a not-so-mini white flour Wonder Bread-like bun. Split the plate with your date, and you're talking 1,000-plus calories each. What better way to get ready for one of the factory's 1,500-calorie entrees before you dig into a 1,200-calorie slice of cheesecake? Or try the roadside sliders. Each is equal to a McDonald's hamburger, or Southern Fried Chicken sliders. Each with the calories of a McDonald's cheeseburger. Heaven forbid you should leave the restaurant without at least one burger. Everybody loves sliders, the chain's chief culinary officer told Vegas Player magazine in July. These are more upscale. Leave it to the Cheesecake Factory to give new meaning to the word upscale. Quick tip. Swap half your pasta for sautéed vegetables. Try tomatoes, spinach, broccoli, and garlic. With a sprinkle of grated Parmesan and black pepper, you may not even need sauce. Dish of the month, red onion topper. Sauté 1 sliced red onion in 1 tablespoon olive oil until browned. Season with 2 tablespoons red wine vinegar, 1/2 teaspoon honey, 1/4 teaspoon black pepper, and 1/8 teaspoon salt. Enjoy on roasted vegetables, salads, sandwiches, chicken, or fish. A memo from Peter G. Lorre, MD, MPH, President, Center for Science in the Public Interest. Follow the money? Conflict of interest is back in the news. Jose Baselga, chief medical officer at New York's esteemed Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, resigned in September after the New York Times and ProPublica reported that he had failed to disclose in dozens of articles in medical journals that he had received millions in payments from drug and healthcare companies. Not long after, other non-disclosing Sloan Kettering researchers were forced into embarrassing journal corrections. Among them, the hospital's chief executive, Craig Thompson, who also resigned from the corporate boards of 2 drug companies, Merck and Charles River Laboratories. Scientists with corporate ties aren't limited to the drug business, of course. As long as the money is flowing, it's reasonable to expect similar behavior, regardless of the industry. Enter Marion Nestle, one of the nation's most prominent nutritionists, professor emerita at New York University, and a former CSPI board member, with a new book that is as timely as it is revelatory. Unsavory Truth, how food companies skew the science of what we eat. Maybe the most comprehensive survey of corporate influence on nutrition science ever published. It's an unappetizing portrait. Nutrition conferences awash in corporate largesse, including sponsored sessions where industry-friendly scientists hold forth. Big food setting the research agenda for academics and then leaning on them to spin their results in the industry's favor. Hefty donations to the American Society for Nutrition, mostly academic researchers, from the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, the National Dairy Council, Coca-Cola, the Sugar Association, and others. Scientists with industry ties on the advisory panel that shapes the government's Dietary Guidelines for Americans, which is used to set standards for school lunches, home-delivered meals for seniors, and other food programs. To make matters more complicated, we can't assume that a study's conclusions are inherently invalid simply because the research was funded by a self-interested company. One is always left with the task of trying to pinpoint precisely where any bias might have crept in. Disentangling this self-serving science is hard enough for scientists, as Nestle notes. But what can everyone else do? That's where Nutrition Action comes in. To help you interpret a study's results, we disclose, when possible, any corporate backers of the research. Our goal is to arm you with the information you need to weigh the unrelenting avalanche of new findings on diet and health. When it comes to the battle against industry misinformation, an informed citizenry is the strongest weapon we've got. That's all the time we have for Nutrition News. Until next time, I'm Jackie Roble for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This program is readily available as a podcast after the initial broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening, and to your health.